I'm Elena Hutchins Lyle.
And I'm Harvinder Vadva.
We're the hosts of Inappropriate Questions, and we're back with season 3.
With some fantastic guests, we break down questions like,
is asking where are you from appropriate small talk?
Is it okay to ask a coworker how much do you make?
Should you ask a polyamorous person, do you get jealous?
Inappropriate Questions season 3. Available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman. This is White Coat Black Art. The menopause transition is a big deal. The changes that happen during that time are many and vast and need to be taken seriously. And yet, as we learned in part one last week, many women say they have felt unprepared to deal with it and that their healthcare providers did not equip them with the tools to handle it. Here's a bit of what we heard.
I started to think, do I have a heart issue? It would have been wonderful if somebody had said, well, you're a 40-something-year-old woman. Heart palpitations are just one of the many symptoms of perimenopause.
I started experiencing anxiety and really, really bad GI issues and genitourinary stuff. I wasn't connecting the dots, nor was my GP. I was so tired all the time. And when you can't do regular biological functions and you don't really know why and you're not prepared for it, then you start freaking out even more.
These hot flashes are severe. I'm losing sleep, cranky. Sex life was, you know, none. And then I started losing my hair.
So was it that you went through that?
Yeah, I wasn't told about it. Right? Because I would have been able to prepare myself for it.
We just heard a little bit of our senior producer, Colleen Ross, who is the genius behind these two episodes. To help us understand better the perspective of the primary care provider when it comes to menopause and what's out there in terms of treatment, we've invited my colleague, Dr. Iris Gorfinkel. She's a family doctor in Toronto and a health columnist on CBC Radio 1. Hi, Iris. Welcome to White Coat Black Art.
Many thanks for having me, Brian.
Iris, you treat patients for menopause. What do you think about these women's experiences, the ones we've just heard, feeling unprepared and undertreated? How surprising is what they have to say to you?
Well, who talks about it? Who prepares women for this? For most of us, it's a big surprise. Yeah, we've heard about hot flashes, but when we have it ourselves. And then on top of it, when we see our doctors to discuss it, what the doctor's agenda is may not at all match what the patient's agenda is.
Do you think the symptoms of women as they go through menopause, perimenopause, are being ignored by medical culture, by us?
I think the problem isn't so much that they're being ignored as much as it is they're not being recognized for what they are. You know, so my first concern as a family doctor is, if this person I'm seeing is fatigued, why are they fatigued? And understand, so many of the symptoms on that menopausal list are not actually specific just for the menopause. Fatigue, I hate to say it, but it is the most common symptom of cancer. You know, so if we consider other symptoms, palpitations, well, you're an emergency room doctor, but actually the thought process of a family doctor isn't all that different.
We see patients with palpitations all the time. And yeah, I have to say that, you know, we tend to think, what's the worst case scenario? A heart rhythm disturbance, coronary artery disease, pulmonary embolus. So we always think disease rather than menopause.
Well, I think any good doctor is going to have to think that way because we don't want to miss things that could actually cause a person to have a stroke or cause a person to have a heart attack shortly. You know, so that's always step number one. Is there something lurking behind? And a lot of the time, patients actually very much appreciate that approach. Now, where it falls off when it comes to the menopause, I've shown her what it's not, but am I showing her what it is?
And, you know, it's interesting, we've talked about heart problems, but what about ovarian cancer? That's a condition that is lurking in the backs of the minds of family physicians, emergency physicians, obstetricians, and gynecologists. And some of the symptoms that we're talking about here could be right up there with ovarian cancer.
You know, I'm listening to that with three different types of ears. It's interesting. The ear of the patient, because you're right, they're always worried. I have ovarian cancer. And why would they be worried about ovarian cancer in particular? Because we have no way of detecting it. But fortunately, in the greater scheme of things, it's not all that common a cancer. Like, I'm worried about the more common stuff. Could this be a breast cancer? Could this be a uterine cancer? And this is a huge thing because most of the time uterine cancer shows up after the menopause. That means 12 months of not having a period in a row and then seeing bleeding. So the question is, during the perimenopause, what if something sinister is going on there? And that can be tricky to tease out. But this is precisely the thought process that winds up making the diagnosis of menopause take longer.
Today, there are more women physicians than ever before. And yet, we had no trouble finding women in the here and now who say their symptoms have been dismissed. And we've talked about one issue, and that is it's always lurking in the back of our minds to be looking for something, a serious life-altering, life-threatening disease. But is there anything else going on?
I think what underlies the entirety of their experience is the fact that society tends to devalue health concerns from women. We are underrepresented in research. You know, and there's this marginalization of a woman's experience. Where do you even start? We adulate the youthful woman's body. And then we have this pervasive sense that what's natural must be good, which is complete and utter nonsense. And so I think that these are serious problems that are still pervasive even within the medical culture. And then you have, I hate to say it, but doctors themselves sometimes do not understand how little risk there is with hormonal replacement to treat severe hot flashes. You know, and that is preventing women from getting the therapy they need. And never mind, the symptoms come on gradually. And because there are gradual onset, sometimes the patients themselves can just denigrate them and say, well, you know what? They're not that bad. Because the natural schema of the menopause is this. As the ovary gets older, it produces less estrogen. And what does the brain say in response? Come on, ovary, make more estrogen. And the ovaries are like, And sometimes the ovaries can respond with just a surge of estrogen. And that's why you get these hormonal fluctuations. And as the ovaries continues to age and makes even less estrogen, those signals back and forth get louder and louder and louder until finally the ovary just says, I'm done. And that's 12 months, no period, menopausal. You know, so the average age of menopause is around 51, but it takes almost a decade. So what a ride that is to get there.
I want to get personal. Have you been through menopause?
I have.
What was it like?
You know, here, this is a bit of a confession, because a lot of the things that I'm accusing other doctors of are things that I probably did before I actually went through the change myself. Mm. So when I went through the change, to say that I was surprised wouldn't be accurate. I'm a doctor, for heaven's sake. I was actually shocked at just how bad the hot flashes were. And I realized, but only in retrospect, that I myself probably wasn't giving women the credit they needed when they were experiencing hot flashes. Because, you know, you start sweating and your clothes get drenched. It's actually crazy. You're lying in bed, you're sleeping, everything's going well, and then suddenly you're awake, covered in sweat. And you're kicking off the blankets, and then you're freezing. I mean, this is the experience. And multiply that by 3, multiply that by 5. On a bad night, multiply it by 10. Mm. And then you find yourself asking, how am I going to function the next day? How is this even going to work? So did I go on hormonal replacement? Dang right, I did. And I went on it for a few years, and it really was life-altering. And I think that there was some gaslighting on my part.
Gaslighting?
Gaslighting in the worst sense. I wasn't validating enough what women were experiencing. And I would ask, any medical experience, anything you've gone through personally, did it not have a profound impact on how you practiced?
Oh, and I'll tell you, being a family caregiver taught me more about the experience and made me more available for my patients, the emergency department. But I wanted to ask you, how did it change your approach to patients once you experienced menopause yourself?
Well, the biggest change had to be in validating the patient's own experience. It was no longer just doctor to patient. It became more woman to woman. And as I say that, I hate the words coming out of my mouth, because it's not like men cannot understand this. Of course men can understand it. Transgender can understand it. But I would say that it became on a different level. Perhaps I was more willing, saying, hey, let's think about hormonal replacement here. Because talk about making a difference. It stopped the hot flashes completely. So it was really life-changing. And that's not just Iris Gorfinkel. This is the North American Menopause Society guidelines.
So we can't talk about hormone replacement therapy without talking about the history, and I certainly know it well. The common medical treatment, of course, was hormone replacement therapy at one point. It should still be today because of the guidelines that you're talking about. But I want you to talk about the Women's Health Initiative and other studies and how they put a stop to hormone replacement therapy back then.
So the Women's Health Initiative got started in the late 90s because so many women, up to 40%, that's according to Dr. Wendy Wolfman, were actually taking hormonal replacement. So basically, this was a study to better understand what it did and what it didn't do. So the study included some 16,000 women. It actually went on for over a decade. But they stopped the study in terms of hormonal replacement and understanding that a little early in 2002. And why was that? Because they saw a very small but measurable increased risk of breast cancer, an increased risk of heart attacks and strokes. And that was a bombshell when it came to hormonal replacement and doctors willing to prescribe them and patients willing to take them. So that, of course, greatly reduced the number of women who were taking hormonal replacement. And that's when another study came on board called the Heart and Estrogen Progestin Replacement Study, or the HERS study. So this is another very famous study because it looked at specifically, is it going to help save heart attacks or strokes? And that study showed definitively, sorry, it does not do that.
And you mentioned Dr. Wendy Wolfman. She's the president of the Canadian Menopause Society. She's the director of menopause and premature ovarian insufficiency clinics at Sinai Health System in Toronto. We're going to hear from her in just a moment. There's still a fair amount of confusion and fear surrounding hormone therapy, despite the updated guidelines that show it's safe for many women. So how safe is it?
You know, I think the key is understanding what it is that we're trying to accomplish. You know, so would I prescribe it? Well, it is actually extremely safe when it comes to breast cancer. What's interesting is that Dr. Wendy Wolfman herself is trying to get the word out about hormonal replacement and its safety.
For that acute time when you're taking the hormone therapy for women ages 50 to 59, the risk of breast cancer was 6 additional breast cancers in 10,000 women, which is considered a rare event. And this doesn't evaluate any of the quality of life issues, the hot flashes, the sleep disruption, the mood change that are all benefited by hormone therapy. So my attitude towards this is, if you are severely being affected by your symptoms, why wouldn't you take something that has such a tiny risk and yet provides such a huge benefit?
A less than a 1 in 1,000 risk over a 5-year period for taking hormones of getting breast cancer.
So, Iris, let's get practical. At what point do you prescribe hormone therapy to a patient?
This is a conversation that's individualized. I prescribe it when the goals that she describes can be safely delivered by the hormonal replacement. So I kind of have a can and can't do list, right? So if a woman's goals are, for example, I want to have more hair, I want to lose weight, well, that's not appropriate for hormonal replacement therapy. Unfortunately, hormonal replacement therapy do not improve the likelihood of having an orgasm either. I've actually been asked that. But what it can do is help with the sleep disturbances, help with the hot flashes. It can eliminate them. It can help with the vaginal dryness. It can help reduce urinary tract infections. And really critically, it can help prevent the loss of bone. Because when we enter the perimenopausal years, the time leading up to the change of life, the bone density tends to fall a lot more quickly than it does before that. And so hormonal replacement therapy can actually slow that loss. And that's something that should be borne in mind. So what are her goals? Now, this isn't a treatment for osteoporosis, but it does, hormonal replacement does in fact reduce the likelihood of having a fracture. What about a heart attack? No, it does not do that. Nor do they change the risk of having a stroke. Now, in women who are 60 or over, there's a slight increased risk of having a blood clot in the leg, but it is a very slight one. But it's interesting, in spite of not changing a woman's weight, hormonal replacement does slow the development of type 2 diabetes by as much as 30%. That's what the Women's Health Initiative study did find. But hormonal replacement does not tend to affect a woman's weight. So that conversation is exactly what happens in the clinic, behind that closed door.
We'll be right back.
I'm Elena Hudgens-Lyle.
And I'm Harvinder Wadhwa.
We're the hosts of Inappropriate Questions, and we're back with Season 3.
With some fantastic guests, we break down questions like...
Is asking where are you from appropriate small talk?
Is it okay to ask a coworker how much do you make?
Should you ask a polyamorous person, do you get jealous?
Inappropriate Questions Season 3. Available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to White Coat Blackheart. This is part two of our series on the menopause movement. This week, I'm speaking with family doctor and CBC Health columnist Dr. Iris Gorfinkel about how she treats patients with menopause symptoms. Menopausal hormone therapy is an effective option for many women. And there are other treatments gaining traction as well. Iris, some women find testosterone helps with their symptoms. You talked to Dr. Wendy Wolfman. What did she have to say about the science behind that kind of treatment?
Yeah, so the North American Menopause Society recommends the use of low testosterone. And what I found it super interesting what she had to say, because low sexual desire in the perimenopause and menopause are super common.
So the first thing is to recognize testosterone is a normal female hormone. It's produced in higher amounts than estrogen in women. Currently, there are no approved testosterones for women in Canada or the U.S. I can tell you there are 33 approved testosterone products in the U.S. for men, zero for women. Decreased sexual desire is a very common sexual dysfunction, especially as women get older. But when we look at the problem, there are many, many different causes. So before we write a prescription for testosterone, we need to take a very thorough history and do a physical examination. And there are situations which are too complex for me to handle. And then I would refer to a sexual counselor or a psychologist or a marital therapist. Sometimes I'll give people a prescription and say, go on a weekend vacation. And they take it home to their partner. And I have had patients come back and say, you know, that was wonderful.
Iris, have you ever prescribed testosterone to a woman?
Actually, I have not prescribed testosterone. And that's because, in part, the studies have actually been mixed when it comes to testosterone. In part, we don't have any products in Canada that are approved specifically for this. But it does seem to improve the libido just a bit. But let's not kid ourselves. Is this just a testosterone deficiency? I don't think so. There's a lot more that goes into a woman's sexual desire. So the relationship, money issue, kids issue, work issues, like all of this can play a role.
What's new in non-hormone treatments?
Yeah, what is so exciting about this area? The discovery of the exact cells in the brain that are responsible for hot flashes. These are neurons in direct communication with the temperature regulation centers in our brain. That represents a brand new area that could be targeted, that could be treated. And in fact, there's a drug now, not before Canada. Health Canada does not have the application just yet, but the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. does, for a drug called fezolinetant. It targets that area in the brain. It's non-hormonal.
So, you know, we have all kinds of treatments for all kinds of different conditions.
just taking a look at what's available and out there for menopause, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of very effective treatment. Have I got it wrong?
I would say there are effective treatments, but, you know, it depends on what you're trying to accomplish with it. Again, I come back to, if a woman has severe hot flashes, ain't nothing like hormonal replacement therapy. But that said, there are a number of non-hormonal options. And a lot of the time, this is a conversation I have with breast cancer patients, patients who are on drugs like letrozole, drugs like tamoxifen. You know, because some breast cancers, actually, estrogen can be like a fertilizer to them. I'm talking about pre-existing breast cancers. So we don't want to fertilize that, that's for sure. So what do? We talk about non-hormonal options, things like antidepressants. So we ourselves did a research study on this, and venlafaxine. Now, venlafaxine is a drug, and fluoxetine, these are common antidepressants. That, in low doses, can greatly reduce the number of hot flashes and how severe they are. So that can make a very big difference. And never mind, you know, anxiety is often a part of it. And so they can help with that as well. And another repurposed drug is gabapentin. Now, that's an old drug that we use to treat seizures and nerve pain, but it's also effective at reducing hot flashes. And then there's that old standby, clonidine. Not too many doctors are using that because that has the potential for side effects. But let's not lose sight of the low-lying fruit, reducing alcohol. You know, that's been in the news now with the new guidelines. How much is really safe? Answer, zero, especially for women, because we're really at risk of developing cancers at a much lower dose than our male counterparts. How about reducing spicy foods, caffeine? Stopping smoking reduces hot flashes. Smoking is extremely inflammatory. That means it creates blood vessels that open up a little bit more readily to changes in hormones. So what about hot beverages, stress, tight clothing? All of these things are known triggers. And in fact, the stress part of it is probably why antidepressants are helpful for that. And then you have other therapies like acupuncture, yoga and meditation, cognitive behavioral therapy. These can all make a difference.
I'm thinking that to be really adept at giving advice to women takes a lot of time. And, you know, I'm mindful of the fact that we've got COVID, we've got a lot of serious problems like cancer that have been undiagnosed and untreated. And I'm wondering if you think that family doctors have the time they need to properly address the concerns of women who are going through the menopause transition.
Yeah, I guess that depends on how a person's going to define properly address. If it means providing a full conversation to every woman who's entering the perimenopause, it's just not realistic. You know, so what's going to happen is that Dr. Iris Gorfinkel and Dr. Family Doctor, we're generally going to respond to what women tell us to respond to. I need to know if my patient is having hot flashes. I need to know if she's having memory problems or problems sleeping, because that's what sets the stage for being able to help with those type of symptoms. How often? What's it like? What's its impact been? But that's not a conversation, realistically, that I can have proactively with all menopausal women. I just don't have the time, Brian.
And if you don't have the time and you've gone through it and you care about it, you're obviously passionate about it. I can only imagine what it's like for other family doctors. And yet millions of women are going through menopause every year. And I'm wondering what it's going to take to get more support from the medical community. And I know you talked to Dr. Wendy Wolfman about that.
Yeah, I had a good conversation with Dr. Wolfman. And what's interesting is that she's convinced that we're simply not taught enough about the menopause and the perimenopause when we're in medical school.
So I think that there has been a problem in the education of physicians. Very few hours are dedicated to menopause and menopausal problems. It's practically nil, both in the undergraduate curriculum as well as in training for family doctors and even OBGYNs. So we have a fellowship program. We have trained 20 fellows over the years. But that needs to be replicated across Canada. The demand is huge. In terms of the Canadian Menopause Society, we are trying to do as much education as we can. We at Mount Sinai also have a continuing medical education program for physicians. For the last 19 years, we are trying to do as much as we can. And I think now it has to be women who push physicians and the medical societies to change.
You know, I'm glad that Dr. Wolfman talked about what women need to do, because I want to close our conversation by bringing it back to them. In part one, we heard from women with perimenopause and menopause symptoms who've been frustrated. What do you think these women would make of the medical response to menopause in 2023?
I think conversations like this, I think guidelines from the North American Menopause Society are all tremendously helpful because they're so empowering. Knowledge is empowerment. The ability to talk about what one is experiencing is the first step in healing. And I'm hoping more conversations like this will happen between women, their family members, their lovers, their significant others, their workplaces. It's time to pull the menopause out of the closet. It's time to normalize it in a sense. And let's talk about what the options are.
Dr. Iris Gorfinkel, thank you so much for coming on to White Coat Black Heart and bringing us your thoughts and for speaking with us.
Many thanks for having me.
This two-part series came from a yawning gap between what women want and what healthcare providers have until recently provided. A gap that needs to be closed. That's our show this week. Be sure to catch part one of the menopause movement, where women talk about their experiences feeling unprepared and undertreated for the menopause transition. Our digital story combines both parts. And on our sister show, The Dose, family doctor and North American Menopause Society certified menopause practitioner, Dr. Shafina Premji, answers some of the many listener questions we received about menopause and perimenopause symptoms. This edition was produced by our senior producer, Colleen Ross, with help from Stephanie Dubois, Amina Zoffer, and Jeff Goods. Our digital writer is Brandy Wakely, and our digital producer is Ruby Buiza. Technical support was by Aronde Williams. That's medicine from my side of the gurney. I'm Brian Goldman. See you next week.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.